Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, listeners. This episode is sponsored by Spoken, which is basically a bit like having an English teacher in your pocket because you can get English practice exercises and lessons through messaging apps on your phone. Basically, what happens is your English teacher at Spoken will send you different tasks, which you do using the keyboard on your phone or using the microphone, sending voice messages, and the tasks adapt to your level and your needs and things like that. You can use this service to work on your English, and they can also help you with things like exam preparation and business English and so on. It's really cool. Remember that because you're a listener, the offer that they are giving to you is that you can get a free 1 hour session on Spoken that is like a sort of introductory session for an hour. And that includes a free assessment of your English skills. Okay. And you can take that and then see if you like the service. And if you want, you can then buy one of their courses and you get 20% off the first month for any of their courses. And if you, after the first hour, if you don't fancy it, then you just go away and carry on living your life. No strings attached. That's pretty cool, isn't it? So to check out that 1 hour session and to get the 20% off the first month of any course, go to getspoken.com/LEP or just click a Spoken logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, listeners. How are you today? You're fine? Pretty good? Not too bad? Yeah, can't complain, right? Can't complain. Mustn't grumble. Could be worse. You're doing all right? You're doing all right. Good. I'm glad to hear it. Here's a new episode, and it's a conversation with Zdeněk Lukas, who is an English teacher from the Czech Republic. You might have heard me mention Zdeněk on this podcast before, and in fact, you might already be familiar with his voice because he has a podcast of his own. You might be one of his listeners, in fact. Zdeněk's podcast is called Zdeněk's English Podcast. Yes, that does sound familiar, doesn't it? It's like the name of my podcast. As Zdeněk has said himself many times, he was inspired to start his podcast mainly after becoming a fan of my podcast, and I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that. He did actually ask me before choosing that name, and I said, yep, go ahead, that's fine. This was years ago now, I think around 2013, when he first set up his podcast and got in touch with me about it. These days, Zdeněk's English Podcast exists in its own right. He's uploaded about 250 episodes, which feature monologues from him about his life and his journey with English, and also conversations with his friends, native English speakers he meets in his hometown or on trips to London, and also in gaming communities online. And he even records episodes with his students of English from time to time. I thought it was about time I talked to Zdeněk on this podcast, and I wanted to ask him about these things. I wanted to ask him how he learned English to such a high level, his story of moving to the UK, where he ended up working with Cockneys in the East End of London, how he became a teacher of English, his thoughts on the question of non-native speakers as teachers of English, his podcast, his love of board games and how they can be used for learning English, and also the board game that he has created himself and the online board game communities that he is part of. So my plan was to interview him about all of those things, but naturally we ended up going off on various tangents, especially at the beginning of this first part. There are two parts to this episode. Certainly in the first part, at the beginning, as you will hear, we go off on tangents. And then we got into all the questions I wanted to ask Zdeněk. And I found out about his whole story, which you will hear. both in part one and part two of this episode. Here's a quick rundown of what's coming up in part one, just to make sure that you can keep up, especially since the conversation goes off in a few different directions at the beginning. So we mention what happened at some Lepster meetups in London that Zdenek organised last year and the year before. I attended the first meetup, but not the second one, and he recorded episodes of his podcast on both occasions. We talk about what it takes to be a genuine Lepster and whether some people might stop listening after a few episodes. We talk about where Zdenek's hometown is and the general location of the Czech Republic for those people who aren't really familiar with it. Then there are a few tangents. We end up talking about global warming and people who deny climate change. We talk about the time that I talked to some Flat Earth conspiracy theorists on the Flat Earth podcast. We talk a little bit about Louis Theroux, who is a UK documentary filmmaker that I really like. Then Zdenek tells us about his academic background in linguistics and English teaching, including details of the university dissertation he wrote about the language of English football commentators. And then we get into Zdenek's whole story of learning English, including what happened when he travelled to England in his early 20s with no plan, just the will to get away and have an interesting experience in another country. The result was that it really pushed his level of English and it led him on his current career and life path. So I'll let you discover all the details now as you listen to our whole conversation, which is presented to you here in two parts. And this is part one, of course. So without any further ado, here we go. It's nice to talk to you, Zdenek. It's been a while. When was the last time we spoke, actually?
Actually, I wrote it down here. It must have been in one of my episodes of Zdenek's English podcast. I think it was when I went to England.
Yeah.
It must have been in summer 2017.
Right.
Yeah.
That was when we stood outside a pub and talked about crime.
Exactly. That's when we invited everyone for a Lepster meetup and then... We just stood outside and let the Lepsters stay inside.
Yeah,
there without telling them anything.
I don't quite know what happened, but there was a group of Lepsters having apparently a great time inside the pub while we were standing outside in the street,
exactly.
Outside recording a podcast for you all about crime and sort of what was it like a crime vocab quiz or something?
Yeah.
I had
some questions prepared and. It was something like that. Like I asked you some questions and I basically prepared idioms as responses to your answers.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And because we were basically kind of making up these situations in order to kind of get the idioms in, a lot of the time I ended up sort of being a fairly hardcore criminal, I think.
Yeah.
And I kept having to say, by the way, everyone, it's not true. It's just, we're just doing it for the language. I'm sure no one listened to it and was like, wait a minute, what? Luke's an ex-convict? I never knew.
I don't think this is what the listeners thought. I think it came across quite well what was going on there.
Yeah, I think everyone got it. Yeah.
But in the Lepster meetup year after, which was this summer 2018, we actually talked about this whole incident of sort of accidentally ignoring the Lepsters at the meetup. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, and some of the people who were there previously came back this year.
Exactly. I think it was at least two, possibly three of them.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, well, good. It was, I listened to that episode that you published because you recorded some bits of conversation that you had with some of the people there. That was quite interesting because you got like a mix of – you got some people at this Luke's English Podcast meetup who had no idea what Luke's English Podcast was.
And exactly.
So you kind of like hang around saying, so how long have you listened to Luke's English Podcast? And they're like, what? who's Luke? What are you talking about?
Yeah, but I think some of them were kind of showing off because, you know, some of them were British, so this is their sense of humor. Just, you know, making fun of everything.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that, you know, I'm sure it happens all the time because I've got, let's say, probably my audience who listen long term are probably really into the podcast, I hope. And then there are loads of, obviously, there are so many more like massively more people who've never heard of it than there are people who listen to it. So it's probably, it happens quite a lot that people are fans of the podcast and they say to someone, a learner of English that they've met, and maybe a learner of English who says, oh, you know, I like to listen to podcasts, and they're like, oh, so you listen to Luke's English podcast, and you're like, sorry, what? Who's what?
And sometimes it's like you don't want to go into explaining everything, especially if you have been a listener for 4 or 5 years. You're like, how do I explain this?
How
do I explain all these hours spending listening to Luke? It's virtually impossible. They will never get the feel, right? They need to try by themselves. And then they try, but it will never be the same either, because in order to basically start listening and become a true Lepster, you have to listen to a few episodes to sort of get into it, you know? It's like when you start going to the gym, it's the same.
Yeah, I think there's probably a certain number of episodes that it's weird. Like, I think people who start listening from the beginning, and I've got quite a lot of those these days, people who start from episode one, because the podcast is on Spotify. It's been on Spotify for probably about a year now, because like a year ago, Spotify sort of opened its doors to podcasts and said, okay, we can have podcasts on Spotify now. And so my podcast host let everyone know and said, hey, if you want your podcast to be on Spotify, just, do X, Y, and Z, and Bob's your uncle. And so I did. And then my podcast went on Spotify. So a lot of people are discovering it through that, and they're listening from episode one, and I'm getting emails from them. Because in the first 10, 15, 20, 30 episodes, I said, you know, let me know what you think. Send me your emails. I'd like to know. And also, I was asking them questions after each episode. Like, so what do you think about music in your country? Mm-hmm. And that's 9 years ago. And then they're replying to me. And so I kind of quite a lot.
If you ask them these questions, I don't think your answer will change much.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, let's say, political things, like you have got a lot of episodes about Brexit, or there was this episode about terrorism in France.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes, exactly. Well, they're more timely things. But yeah, I mean, it's great. People are sort of responding to the questions, which were quite sort of non-time specific. But the thing is that I get quite a lot of responses for the first 20, 30 episodes, and then there's a lot of, everyone sort of goes quiet. So I think there's probably a sort of threshold, right?
Absolutely there is, Luke. It must be exactly the same as if you start doing any activity. When you take up going to the gym, it's exactly the same. There's some sort of threshold, and you need to get past that. Mm. And if you manage that, well, Bob's your uncle, as you say. And
you're in. You're a Lepster.
You're in, yeah.
Yeah, but I just wonder, like, how large this threshold is. Like, how big is the gate into my podcast kingdom? I've got a feeling it's kind of a narrow doorway, and that there's, like, maybe a crowd of people who's sort of gathering outside, and only certain number of people get through, and then they're in. They're into this magical, weird place where they learn English and, I don't know, what else? Have fun, I hope.
Well, one of your listeners could do a research into this, I suppose, come up with some data, and possibly we would find out. It might be actually an interesting discovery.
I think it would be very interesting. I'm not sure what I would do with the information afterwards. I'd be like, well, clearly we need to make some architectural changes to the gates to the Luke's English Podcast Kingdom. And it's like, do we have any architects or engineers? Like, no, it's just you, Luke. You're the only one who can do any of this stuff. It's like, oh, all right, well, let's just carry on then.
Yeah. Of course, I recommend the podcast to a lot of my students and friends, but it's like they listen to a few episodes and some of them keep listening, but a lot of them don't. And it's mind-boggling for me, you know? Mm. I don't get it. Why? Because it's so great and I've been listening for so long. Why is it that they can't do it? But I guess it's like with any other activity, you know, it's difficult to form a habit.
Yeah, it is. And to be fair, like going back to the early days of my episodes, probably the first, I don't know how many, maybe the first 30 or 40 episodes were quite disciplined in the sense that I had, for example, a kind of chatty bit or a sort of an entertaining-y bit. And then there would be the language section, And yeah. this language section was all about dealing with language and actually teaching in a sort of fairly structured way. And then I kind of moved away from that after a certain number of episodes. Mm-hmm. I started to sort of experiment and explore just sort of chatting freely, okay. talking to guests. And my episodes got longer as well.
Yeah. So you think it could have pushed some people off or something like
maybe.
That?
Yeah, maybe when I started talking about like bears having fights with sharks. Some people were like, nah, I'm going to stop listening at this point.
This is the best about LAP. All these episodes about bears, sharks and gorillas and you name it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess so. Yeah. For the people who keep listening. Yeah. I mean, that is great. I mean, I suppose it's like the same for me when I listen to podcasts. There are some things that I love really strongly, mm-hmm. But I realize that that's quite a niche thing, that the things that I really love are not necessarily the things that absolutely everybody loves, you know? Like when you start to appeal to a very broad audience, you at the same time you start to lose some uniqueness or you lose some edge. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got like BBC 6 Minute English, for example, which has a very broad audience indeed, I think. Yeah. I expect they've got a massive audience because they've ticked all the right kind of boxes in order to get a big audience. Like the episodes are just 6 minutes long. Mm. There's a script, there's a transcript, there's a language point in every episode. But at the same time, how does it feel when you listen to it?
Well, I'm not their listener, but I know what you're talking about. I know the podcast. I'm aware of it.
I mean, they do very, very, very good work, and I recognize that, and I think that it would probably be a good idea for me to do something along those lines too. But at the same time, when I listen to it, I just feel like I'm missing the human element here. I'm missing – there's something about the relatability. Yeah. It's all scripted, and it's like, mm-hmm. Hi, well, you're listening to BBC 6 Minute English. My name's Josh. Hi, Josh. I'm Steve. Yeah. I know you are, Steve. You know, we've sat in this room for the last 6 hours. You know, like they're not actually saying that, but it's kind of like this fake scripted conversation. Yeah.
At the same time, this is maybe what some people really want and look for and need. You know, something simple.
Yeah, I think
quick, not too long.
If time is an issue, and you know, if people are like, I've got to learn English and I've got to learn it as quickly as possible. And I just need something that's not going to take up too much time. Something with a script, something where it's like, boom, 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 just give me the language. Like, I don't give a shit about the people actually making the podcast. Then this might be the thing for you. And I don't know, maybe there are some people out there who love listening to those conversations. Yeah, and it's fine. It's just
fair enough. But yeah. But for me, it's, if I compared your podcast to this podcast, like apples and oranges, it's absolute something completely different, really. Yeah.
Which is cool because it just shows that there's room for all sorts of variety and lots of different types of thing, which is, you know, it's great. I just love podcasting. It's just the best. I really, really love it.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm interviewing you in this episode. So how are you today? How's it going?
I am okay.
Yeah.
I'm great. Thanks.
What have you been up to today?
I've been to school. Not as a student, but as a teacher.
Ah, yes.
I have gone for a walk and came back. And now I'm recording a podcast with you.
You actually went, you just went for a walk, just like, I think I'll go for a walk.
Yeah, I did that right before the recording, actually.
Uh-huh. What, breath of fresh air?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
Well, at least you have fresh air where you live. That's good. All right, so... Well, Zdenek, lots of things for me to talk to you about, like the fact you're an English teacher, you do your podcast, you also have designed a game as well, a board game. It's an online board game. We're going to come back to it, right? We'll talk about it in time. But let's start with this. Where do you actually live?
I live in the Czech Republic. It's about 50 kilometers away from Prague, the capital.
That's your town, right, where you live?
Yeah, it's a small town. I am not exactly sure how many inhabitants we have, but it could be somewhere in the region of 10,000, 20,000 inhabitants. Uh-huh. So not a big town, but I actually live in a village part of that town. So to get to the city center, I have to ride my bike. So that's what I do every day. I ride my bike to work, to school.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I've seen photos, I think probably for the Luke's English podcast photo competition a few years ago. I think you sent a picture of like your point of view while listening to the podcast. And it was basically like a frozen forest with like the front wheel of a mountain bike. I just imagine you sort of cycling through this sort of frozen land. And there just seemed to be no one around. It's like so different to my journey to work.
Well, Luke, obviously I sent that photo so that hope in mind that I would win that competition. Obviously, it doesn't really happen that often. And considering there's global warming now, it almost never happens anymore. So
snow on the ground.
Snow on the, well, there, for example, today there was a bit of snow, but it melted away quickly. So yeah, it's not the same. Honestly, these winters, lately we haven't had any harsh winters. And they say everywhere winter is coming, but I can't really see it. So yeah. I wonder what's going on.
Well, I think we know what's going on, don't we?
Do we?
Yeah, of course. It's global warming. I mean, it's scientific fact.
Oh, yeah, that, obviously.
Yeah.
I thought it was fake news.
Oh, right. Of course. Well, I don't think we can... I mean, who are you going to believe? Like, you're going to believe the people who just call it all fake news for whatever reason, or the many, many... very reliable scientists who all agree that...
But we are talking about the American president, Luke.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, so what?
We actually had a president here, too, that was so adamant as to saying that there is no global warming. He even wrote a book. I think it was called either Blue Planet or something like that.
Yeah.
And, like, he went to conferences and... everywhere he was spreading this strange, weird point of view that there's no global warming, even though the scientists have proven it long before.
Why do these guys say these things?
I don't know. I guess they just want to be interesting or something like that.
Yeah, you think
but
so?
Do you think they truly believe it?
I think some of them do. I think actually some of them probably do. And they're maybe not really interested in going the extra mile in order to really find out what's going on. They've probably just decided that they've just probably personally thought, well, I personally don't believe it and I don't really want to believe it for some reason, and therefore I'm now going to construct some argument based on certain jumped up evidence that it's not true. And what are the arguments they usually give? What do they say?
I don't know, but it reminds me of those flat earthers you had on your podcast.
Well, I didn't have the flat earthers on my podcast. I was on their podcast. I did talk about it on the podcast. I made a website episode and an app episode where I talked about my experience of talking to flat earth conspiracy theorists. Mm-hmm. And I was on their podcast for like 2 hours or something.
Yeah.
Did you listen to that?
Yeah, I remember that quite clearly. It was an interesting experience.
It was. Yeah.
I liked how you were trying to be so like nice and respectful, yet it was obvious to me with every single word you said that's not how you feel about the whole issue.
Well, I mean, I thought to myself, if I was going to go on their podcast, it's a complicated one, isn't it? But so I'd mentioned it on an episode of my podcast. I'd talked about it because I was talking about my trip to the States and how we went to the Griffith Observatory, which is this amazing place all about the Earth and the moon and the planets. And and it was fascinating to me. And I also then talked about how flat Earth, the idea that the Earth is flat is this thing that a lot of people are talking about at the moment, particularly in America, in the United States, and a bit in the UK, maybe other places, but largely in the States, there's this fairly popular idea these days that the Earth is in fact flat. And so I kind of wanted to talk about it. And then somehow these guys from the Flat Earth podcast picked up on it. I don't know how. And they wrote to me and said, hey, we really want to invite you onto the podcast to talk about this. And they said, we're not like these crazy aggressive conspiracy theorists who are going to shout you down and stuff. We're reasonable people, and in fact really we're just on the search for truth. You know, we don't, that's it. It was like, we don't believe the earth is flat. We just, we just don't believe it's round, or we're not trying to make you believe the earth is flat. We're just trying to find the search for truth. And I wish I'd said this, but I didn't. I wish I'd said to them, you know, so you're all about just trying to find the truth. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. your objective. So why is your podcast called the Flat Earth Podcast? I wish I'd said that. That would have been brilliant.
I see.
It's like one of those things where after you've had like an argument with someone, you think of all the things you should have said.
Yeah.
But yeah, I decided that I would go into the conversation with them on their podcast by being sort of reasonable and nice, because I just thought,
yeah.
Well, I don't necessarily have all the science, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an astrophysicist or something, so I don't have all of the science, which kind of in a way puts you in a slightly difficult position, because
besides, you can imagine that these guys, they have been really looking into it for a long time.
Yeah, and they've got all kinds of so-called evidence.
Yeah.
And so it's very tricky. What makes it difficult to talk to people who have ideas like that is that essentially they are making a big claim. They're making they're making a bold claim, and if you make a bold claim, you need to back it up with bold evidence. And it's not my job to disprove everything you're saying. It's your job to prove that it's not bullshit, you know. And so that means the ball is in their court, in a sense. Mm-hmm. It's just very hard to argue against them when, you know, you have to fact check absolutely every single thing they say, and also suppress
laughter when you're doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, kudos to you for being so respectful to them. And like, I see what you were doing there. It makes sense. If you are invited onto someone's podcast, you have to.
I was trying to take the Louis Theroux approach. I don't know if you know who he is. I need to do a podcast episode about this guy. He's a British documentary filmmaker, and he kind of makes documentaries about sort of slightly odd beliefs or like cults, or he goes and visits people who've got, you know, quite strange beliefs. Like, you could imagine he would do an episode all about flat earth conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
And what he does is he goes and visits people, but he's very unassuming. He's very nice. He's not aggressive. He doesn't challenge them. What he manages to do is sort of make friends with the people he's talking to, and at the same time sort of allow them to just talk, and it exposes them in a sense that, you know, he's not, I don't know how cynical his position is. I think to an extent his aim is to genuinely make a human connection with these people who have different beliefs to him. And it's interesting to see the interaction between Louis, who is, you know, reasonable person from our point of view, and then the sort of slightly odd people he's talking to. It's just really fascinating to see the dynamic that goes on, and the way that when these people let their guards down, that's the thing, when they let their guards down, it kind of, they perhaps show themselves for who they really are.
Yeah.
I don't know if
and then it's up to the viewers to make their own judgments, I guess.
Yeah that's the idea. But anyway, we're talking about I'm supposed to be interviewing you.
It's all right.
So you live, your town's called Poděbrady, right?
That's right. Poděbrady, yeah.
Yeah. I probably pronounced it wrong. And just for my listeners who might not be so familiar with all the geography, just, you know, tell us, describe the location of the Czech Republic, if you would. I mean, I'm just talking on behalf of people who are not, you know, familiar with all the borders and all wherever.
Okay, so the Czech Republic is sort of in the middle of Europe, and we share borders with Germany, Poland, Austria, and Slovakia.
Right. Okay.
And we have got about 10 million inhabitants.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the European Union, although we are one of the more Eurosceptic members, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And
okay.
The climate is sort of mild, but it's not the same as in the UK, because you have got like oceanic weather, that makes any sense. And we are a landlocked country, so you can imagine it's kind of drier here. And when it rains, well, it doesn't really rain that much these days, to be honest. There was terrible drought in summer here.
Really?
I guess it was the same everywhere.
Yeah.
But normally when it rains, it rains longer. Like it could be even a few days of rain. Mm. Whereas I don't remember this happening in England that much. Like it's more like showers, you know, like short showers.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. It's just changeable weather in the UK where it can rain at any time and it probably will, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I see. Now, so you work as an English teacher there?
I do, yeah.
How long have you been doing that?
Well, that's an interesting question. I graduated from the university in 2011.
Uh-huh.
But I had taught before that. You know, but it was sort of, I was just dabbling in teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was working for a language school without actually knowing what to do that much.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, but it was just a part-time job, really. You know, it wasn't that intense. Of course, I started working after I graduated.
Okay. You graduated from university in 2011.
Yeah. Right.
What did you do at university?
I studied English teaching.
Uh-huh. You did a master's, didn't you?
Yeah. Got a master's degree in that. And normally, when you study English teaching in the Czech Republic, you would study it alongside another subject.
Mm-hmm.
Such as, let's say, you would have a combination of geography and English or physical education and English.
Yeah.
But my field of study was just solely English. So it was, yeah. So
English language.
Yeah. It was English teaching.
English teaching.
It was English teaching. So there were three modules. It had three modules. One of them was didactics. So it's just like all the pedagogy and methodology and how to teach,
mm-hmm.
and psychology and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there was literature and culture studies.
Yeah.
And then the last one was my favorite one. That would be linguistics.
Right.
It involved morphology, phonology, phonetics, lexicology, syntax, all this kind of thing.
I see. That's where you're really sort of just picking apart language.
Yeah.
And you focused on, well, obviously it was English because you were studying to teach English.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do a dissertation at the end of your master's?
I did, yeah.
Tell me I think I know what it was about, but what was it?
Do you?
Yeah,
I think so. Well, being me, I tend to like to kill more birds with one stone. So I went for my interest pretty much, which has always been football.
Yeah.
I did a dissertation which was called Formal Features of English of wait a minute of English football commentaries or something like that.
That's brilliant.
So what I did was that I actually I watched short videos from the Premier League,
mm-hmm.
and then I transcribed what the commentators were saying there.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't always easy,
yeah.
But in the end, I got there, and then obviously we had to do a research, and there was like a theoretical part where you had to like put a few books together and just write like in more general way what about linguistics, but then you gradually moved into like the practical part when I was actually like looking at individual items of language such as idioms or it was a bit syntax as well, like how the sentence elements relate to each other and so on.
Okay, and this was all based on, so your source language here was the football commentary of English, like the English Premier League. Mm-hmm. So you were listening to like BBC commentators, ITV, Sky TV presenters?
Something like that, yeah.
I wonder who you were listening to. Probably someone like John Motson, but do you know?
The thing is like I had to find something somewhere which I could then put into my bibliography, you know, like as a reference.
Yeah.
So I suppose I found something online. I don't remember anymore, but it was like three or four short excerpts from football matches, and I think all of them were like famous matches, like or at least they were like top teams from England, nothing.
Yeah. It was probably clips from BBC Match of the Day, stuff like that.
Yeah, something like that, exactly.
That's actually, to me, that's brilliant. That's brilliant because, you know, I think it's fascinating the way that BBC sports reporters talk. I mean, what mm-hmm. did you learn? I mean, obviously you learned a ton from doing it, but like, is there something that stuck with you about what the dissertation you did about football commentary?
I suppose the thing that everybody knows is that they use a lot of cliches.
Yeah.
So they would say things like it was a game of two halves or what else?
Yeah. It's not over till the final whistle.
Yeah.
It's not over till the fat lady sings.
Exactly. And they use all these adjectives. I don't know what you would call them, but let's call them strong adjectives.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fantastic goal, superb challenge, so a lot of like expressive language, if we may call it that.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, a lot of idioms, and it's like jargon, pretty much, right?
Yeah. I also have noticed the grammar is a little different in some cases as well.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, because it's the game is very very like fast. You have to accommodate, you have to adjust to it with your commentary. So I suppose there would be a lot of like auxiliary verb omissions and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And also this one thing, I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but which is like, and it's particularly actually, it's actually more common in football players in their post-match interviews where they will be describing things that happened in the game which is finished, and yet they're using present perfect tense to describe it.
I see.
Right. So they'd be saying, so you scored a magnificent goal there, Stephen, just talk us through that. And then he's like, yeah, so the ball's come to me and I've taken it down on my chest and I've pushed it to one side and I've seen the defender coming towards me and I've put it through his legs and then I've beaten the goalkeeper and then I've hit the ball first time and there it is in the back of the net.
Yeah.
You know, whereas normally, if you're talking about like past events like that, you would say things like, "So I got the ball, I beat the defender, I hit the ball first time, and scored."
I think the reason this is because it sort of pulls you into it, like when you're listening watching it as a viewer.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you some sort of sense of immediacy.
Yeah,
and for the same reason, the commentators would say he scores.
Right.
Rather than he scored or he has scored, right? Yeah.
And you know, all my football player references are like 10 years old, by the way. So if I say, "And Gerrard passes the ball to Scholes, and he hits it first time, and it's a fantastic, and he scored. Gerrard scores for the 14th time this season." Yeah, even though it's either happening right now or has just happened, but these using present simple tense. Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. That's cool. That's really a really cool thing to write about for a master's degree, I have to say.
It can be a pain in the neck writing a master's degree. It's a lot of pages. Like mine was with all the appendices. Mm-hmm. It must have been like 90 or 100 pages or something like that. So it can be a bit, you know, mundane and frustrating and yeah. I was quite disciplined, all things considered. Some students left it till the last moment, so I was like doing all right in terms of timing. But you know,
yeah,
it can be an issue for some, obviously.
Well,
so because I was enjoying writing about football, I guess that's what helped.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? That's like the, I guess that's the key thing. You've just got to find that thing that allows you to keep going.
Yeah.
All right. So, so you, even before you did your master's degree in English language teaching and stuff, like your English must have been good in order to do a master's in English. So how did you, tell us about how you got your English up to that level then?
Okay. Well, to be honest, I didn't study English that much at the elementary school and secondary school. Like I went to a school, we call it here gymnasium, which would be something like grammar school in England. But basically we have a lot of subjects quite in depth. But when you graduate, you know nothing. You have to go to university, this kind of school. So I had my final leaving examination in English.
What age?
But I was, well, I graduated at the age of 11. 19.
Uh-huh. 11, 19, same thing.
yes. And so I was not that bad at grammar, and I suppose I was about B1 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But these days, the students are much better. That's because, Luke, after the fall of communism in the Czech Republic here, mm-hmm. Instead of Russian, everybody wanted to learn English suddenly. So English became the first foreign language taught at schools. But the teachers weren't that good because they hadn't had any prior education. So it was understandable. So you can imagine. And also, like, they were still using the grammar translation method and outdated methods. Mm. So it took some time to get to where we are now. But so, unfortunately, I was at that age where I was studying at that time where the teachers were not that good.
Ah.
Right. That's what I'm trying to
say. So, sorry, we're talking about just after the fall of communism, right? Just after that. Is that right? I mean, just one question. When was your actual first contact with English? At what age did you have your first contact?
It might have been when I was about 11 or 12 or something like that. But it was, it was just classes at an elementary school. But to be honest, it wasn't really much. Like, it was two lessons a week. And basically, we were just talking about English in Czech, which is my native language, so you can imagine, it was just wrong methods and everything was just
sounds familiar.
Not right.
Sounds very familiar to me, because I had French lessons at school, and it was quite similar. I think our teachers were trying to use other methods, but often we would end up there'd be a bit of English going on in there, and you just never got the sense that you were learning that much. Maybe we were terrible students as well. There was a lot of misbehaving in the classroom and stuff, but it does sound familiar. Yeah.
Also, like, you have that, like, there's a difference in that the younger generations these days, they have got so much they can do right with English because of the internet. Like, we didn't have internet when I was at an elementary school, or when I was at a secondary school, it started, but it wasn't that widespread yet, so it took some time.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. First contact was like 11 or 12 years old.
Yeah.
Like those sort of fairly basic lessons at school. But then, you said a bit like kind of B1 level.
That would be like when I was about 19, 20.
And how did you get up to that level then?
But the thing is, like, I don't think I was able to speak or even like understand when people were speaking. So I think my skills were bad. I think I was just good at like grammar, and I knew some vocabulary. But basically then I went to a language school, which I guess I got even better at grammar and vocabulary. And after that I went to University of Economics, but I soon discovered that I wasn't really cut out for it.
Yeah,
it wasn't my cup of tea, so I just basically escaped to England.
Right. When? What age?
I was 21. I was 21.
And you escaped to England?
Yeah, sounds like a strong word, but
well, maybe.
Basically, I went with a friend at the time, and we just, like, I wasn't enjoying studying about economics. It's just not something I'm good at.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the only thing I enjoyed there was like physical education and English.
Yeah.
So these were the only subjects, but these obviously they were not the key things we should know at the time. Mm.
Okay. Yes. And so you were like, screw this.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go to England then. And was it, did you have an idea of what you were going to do, or what it was going to be like? I mean, were you like, we'll go to England and it will be just like this? I mean, what was your vision of it?
Not at all. I just knew I would go for 10 months. Like, this was my plan. I would go just for 10 months, and see what happens. And there was no vision whatsoever. I had absolutely no idea what I'm getting myself into.
Okay. And so how did you actually get there?
By bus, I think.
Really? You took a bus to England? Really,
I think it was a bus, yeah, actually. Yeah.
That must have been a long journey.
It's 18 hours to London.
So 18 hours to London?
Yeah, I went straight to London and I stayed there.
Okay. Whereabouts in London? Where did you end up?
I ended up in Finsbury Park.
Like in the park itself, like sleeping on the bench or something? Or in the football stadium, like Arsenal. Here we are at Finsbury Park first time.
Actually, the place I lived in was not far away from the old Highbury Stadium.
Yeah.
If that rings a bell. So it was like 1 kilometer away from that.
Right.
And it was close to the Finsbury Park you mentioned as well.
Yeah.
But I did not sleep in the park, fortunately.
Good.
Did not have to. But I went to play football there sometimes. Yeah.
You're an Arsenal.
Unfortunately, the Arsenal football team, Arsene Wenger, did not really appreciate my football skills. So unfortunately, I didn't become a football player.
You're an Arsenal fan.
Yes. I suppose that's how I became an Arsenal fan.
Oh, you became an Arsenal fan when you went to Finsbury Park.
To be honest, I sort of became more an Arsenal fan after I came back home to the Czech Republic.
Yeah.
But.
Okay. It's the connection. You got the connection.
Yeah, that was a connection, obviously. And there was also a good Czech football player. So I guess that was part of the reason as well. There was Tomáš Rosický.
Uh-huh.
And I liked the way he played.
Right.
So on, and he became an Arsenal legend, actually. So
yeah,
I suppose this was part of the thing.
Okay, so you took your bus to London. You found yourself in the Finsbury Park area, which is sort of like northeast London,
mm-hmm.
Not far from the Arsenal football ground. And so what did you do? I mean, did you did you work?
Well, first I had to find a job because obviously I had nothing in mind. As I said, it was sort of blind. What's the word
blind
I'm looking
faith.
For?
Blind faith.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
So, if I remember clearly, there was some sort of recruitment agency which I went in, and they then found some sort of a job for me. But first we would have a job for a day. So it was like laborer, basically. Like we were laborers, just helping out with anything people needed. Usually carrying stuff from place A to place B. And it was laboring, basically. But it was also my first job. So it was kind of interesting, actually. Like it might not sound that exciting now, like as I'm describing it, but it was kind of interesting. And doing this in a foreign language, it was like very challenging for me, but also sort of exciting because I wanted to show everybody that I had what it takes, you know.
Mm.
So, and then I ended up, so after like doing these little jobs on and off, like they would just send us to a different place in London. And then after I like proved myself that I'm reliable and I'll do the job they asked me to do, then they would offer me to take some sort of a course. It was like course health and safety course, because as we know, health and safety is big in England. So safety first.
Yeah.
And so I took that course. I did quite well with that. So that's how they sort of like deployed me, if I'm using the right word.
You became like the health and safety officer.
No. They deployed me into a more permanent job, basically. It was in Romford, if that rings a bell. It's
a suburb of London, right?
It's in eastern part of London, and not far from West Ham. Right. So actually, Luke, and I'm very proud of this, I worked among Cockneys, among true Cockneys, with Cockney speakers. My boss was Cockney, and so I worked there for about a year.
Wow, it's Romford. All right, mate. All right, Zdenek.
That's actually funny because first time I came to work, of course my boss asked me what my name was, and I told him my name is Zdeněk, and obviously he couldn't pronounce it, and he said Zdeněk, was trying to say Deniek.
Yeah.
And then he just decided to call me Dan because it was close enough for him. And ever since then, I was wearing a hard hat.
Yeah.
With labeled Dan on it.
Oh my God.
So there are some old photos I could find still with that. It's
That's fantastic. So I can imagine it's like, all right. So what's your name then, mate? Zdeněk. Sorry, what? Zdeněk. Dan. You're Dan. All right.
Yeah,
Dan.
I'll just call you Dan.
Yeah. Okay. That must have been an experience. How long were you doing that then? How long were you working with these Cockneys?
About 1 year. So it was basically an electrical company called T. Clark.
Yeah.
Might be quite famous in England, I think. And so I was a laborer. It was interesting. We were like rolling cable drums.
Okay.
And carrying like all those trays, and they called it unit strut, basically some pieces of metal which are used to hold large cables, because it was a large hospital building, like really, really huge. And so it needed a lot of wiring done.
Fitting.
And we were the ones fitting. We were the ones carrying all this. So we would have to learn how to navigate ourselves, because the buildings, they had their parts, and so it was kind of confusing, because obviously you can imagine a construction site, it's a living organism almost, you know. So things change quickly there when they put up the plaster boards and all that. So you would come to work and you would realize that the place you knew, it's something else, and so you would have to learn to navigate. And then also later I became a storeman there.
Okay.
So I even had like a radio, so I was calling the managers and the bosses, like and stuff like that. It was quite interesting, actually.
So what was the effect then on your English?
It was obviously huge. Like when I came back, obviously the first thing is that my listening improved massively. Whenever I spoke to my boss, he thought that I sound like somebody from Parliament, like a member of Parliament, because I suppose that must have been because when I was learning English, I learned all these grammar constructions and I used a lot of like complex sentences, like relative clauses. So there was a way to say it much easier, in an easier way.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Interesting. So yeah. you sounded a bit formal to him.
I did. Yeah. Like every single time. So, for example, I had to make some orders or something like that, he would make fun of me.
Yeah. Could you give us an example, if you can?
I'm not sure if I remember anything in particular, but... Yeah.
But you'd like, you're making an order. So you're calling the guy on the radio, and you're saying, you know, how would you do it? How would you have done it? I mean, what you're ordering, like 6 steel plates or something? I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's like, hello, I would like to place an order for 6 steel plates, if that's possible, please, or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, and then there's definitely a way to say it so that it's snappier and faster and quicker, and you would use the right vocabulary, like pace here. But I wasn't, I'm still struggling, as you can see, Luke, but...
No, you're doing great.
Yeah, I was basically stumbling over my words, and you can imagine, like, as any other English learner, I didn't always know the words or, you know, and then you can imagine, there was sort of a bit of an anxiety as well, because I didn't want to mess up, because otherwise my boss might tell me off or take the piss. Which would happen more often than not, and you know, you can imagine.
How did you feel then? Like, you know, there must have been some days where you came home from work feeling terrible.
Yeah, definitely. Like the first few days and months were really tough for me, but then there was a point where it all kind of shifted towards like having great time, and like even being like, I felt like I'm really important for them. At one point I said, I have to go. Like I always wanted to go back to study at the university. Yeah. I never wanted to end up doing manual work like that.
Yeah.
No offense, but I just thought, because all my friends all my schoolmates went to university, so I would feel like I would underperform or I wouldn't live up to my potential or whatever.
Yeah.
So essentially, I always wanted to go back. But when I told my boss, he was like, no, we can't do that. And then he even offered me a pay rise and all that, you know. So I became really important for them. The funny thing was that I was supervising like native speakers,
yeah,
even though my English wasn't perfect. But because I knew the place really well, yeah, and I knew the work, like, you know, they really needed me there.
That must have been really healthy in a way for your English, but, you know, the sense that they needed you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're on the radio, right? So you're kind of like, you know,
exactly,
this communications guy.
Yeah, yeah.
That's brilliant. Mm-hmm. Okay. So
it was a lot of fun, yeah. And it boosted especially my confidence. That was the most important thing.
Right, yes. And then you returned to the Czech Republic for that reason, as you said, because you felt like you didn't want to end up being a laborer, that you felt you had work to do back home.
No, I felt like I need to go to university. I always wanted to get a degree, basically. So.
And so at this point you thought, well, English, I've got this English now, so this is going to be the thing I do.
Exactly. Well, yeah, pretty much, because I knew like my English got so much better. Mm. Like when I came back, like the people around me were also so bad suddenly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't even have to go to school. It was just the fact that I worked among a lot of native speakers or non-native speakers with good English. I was quite lucky, actually.
Yeah.
That I had like a co-worker from South Africa, and there were some Australians.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, so I got quite lucky. My boss, like, because I became like a foreman. What's the word? Like, it's a terrible word, but like a dog's body.
It's a good word.
I became like a dog's body for my boss, like his assistant, pretty much. So even when he went once for holiday, he went on a cruise for 3 weeks. I became the store man. So they said you will do his job. So I was the store man. So I spoke to the biggest, they called him the site manager, I think.
Yeah, okay.
I would just speak about everyday issues, and it was like I was given a lot of responsibility considering how young I was.
Yeah.
And how my English wasn't perfect.
That's amazing, because like you were young, your English wasn't perfect, and yet you fairly quickly became a very important person on the site. So how do you reckon that happened? How did you do that?
I suppose I'm just responsible, reliable by nature, or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. It was just in me there. Yeah. And also, it's a bit like I always have this need to prove myself, you know.
Yeah.
Like even we'll possibly get to this issue of native speakers versus non-native speakers teachers. So it's always in me, like, to show everybody that I can do the job just as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that was the same thing. I was like, I can do this. You know,
yeah.
I was always kept going, even though, of course, there were hiccups and times when I felt down. I won't deny it. But, you know, eventually, yeah, I got to a good position there. And also I learned a lot of Cockney slang.
Yeah, I bet you did.
Along the way.
Like, you know, the general dog's body, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
Like, which is like this person who just sort of does all the other little jobs that maybe other people don't want to do.
Yeah,
right? And I guess if you do become the general dog's body, then eventually you start to learn everything about all the different work that's going on the site, and at some point they realize that you're the only one who knows exactly what's going on everywhere.
But to be honest, like some of them had university education, so I would never be able to like progress. Like, you know, I could always be someone who's carrying stuff or looks after a list of items anyway, you know, because obviously I wasn't university educated. I didn't have a college.
Because some of them had done degrees in site management and in construction.
Because they were electricians and, you know, most of them had done college.
Yeah. Yeah, I see. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you go back to the Czech Republic, mm-hmm, armed with your newfound English skills.
Uh-huh.
And that's when you started sort of doing teaching without having got your qualification.
Not that much.
Because you said, sorry, which year are we, which, what's the time frame here?
Which year are we talking? 2006. I came back in 2006, I believe.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I took a break like for half a year and started preparing myself for the entrance exams.
Yeah. Yeah.
And obviously you don't want to take any chances. So I applied to more universities. And then I chose to go to the University of Pardubice, which is another town, but it's a larger town than Poděbrady. And this is where I studied English or English teaching.
Yeah. Okay. And you graduated.
Yeah. And yeah, it was actually quite easy for me there.
Yeah.
Because I had a huge advantage. I wasn't the only one who had been to England or to an English speaking country, mm-hmm. but there were about 3-4 of us that we immediately had a huge advantage over everybody else. It was just a huge edge.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And yeah.
Do you think that you are? Let's say you're an English success, right? Do you think mm-hmm. that's specific to you? Is it? Are you different to other people?
What do you mean?
You know what I mean? Like, you know, do you think that, what do you think of this idea that some people are just good at learning languages and other people aren't?
Okay. I don't think I have got a particular talent. Actually, when you know those psychology tests? Mm. I remember doing one when I was about 16, and it turned out that I'm not actually that good at it's called like linguistic intelligence, I think.
Uh-huh.
And I was actually much better at, you know, those tests where you have to give the numbers of dice, like there's some numbers are missing and you have to work it out. Like,
yeah.
And that's what I was really good at. So they said I should do some civil engineering or something like that. But I was never really into it. I never really enjoyed it. So I don't think I was particularly talented or anything like that. It was just, I just fell in love with the language really when I was in England. It was just really interesting for me, and it was like very, very natural way for me to learn it. And it's just I could see making progress. It was so rewarding, you know?
Yeah.
So satisfying.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, everyone, that's it for part one. That's where we're going to stop this part, but the conversation will continue in part two, which I think will be available for you right now. I think I'm going to upload these two parts at roughly the same time, so you should be able to just move on to part two and continue listening to the conversation. How's it going for you? How's it going? It was an interesting conversation. It's always interesting for me to ask people who have learned English to a good standard. And I think you can all agree that Zdenek's English is good, right? I mean, how do you determine what good means? Well, that's a whole podcast of its own, isn't it? That's a whole podcast episode of its own. But certainly Zdenek's English is effective enough for him to do all these things, and indeed to, you know, pass his teaching qualifications and all that stuff. That's not in question. It's not in question, Luke. All right? Zdenek's level of English is not really in question here, I think you'll agree. But what's interesting for me is just to interview people who have learned English to a good standard in order to find out how they did it. Like, you know, what's the story? Everyone's got a story to tell, in my opinion. I mean, you know, in any case, like any person in any walk of life has got a story to tell. But certainly people who've learned English to a good level have a story of how they did it. And I think Zdenek's is an English one. Imagine that, just going to England, just traveling there, and then ending up working with a bunch of Cockneys in some building site. That must have been really difficult at the beginning, but also amazing. Well done, Zdenek. Hats off to you for doing that. And it's obviously paid off with his English. Okay. Anyway, no more talking now, Luke. That's the end of part one. You can listen to part two now, can't you? Yes, you can. Good. All right, then I'll let you do that. And I'll just now say goodbye to you like this, like I usually do. All right. Thanks for listening. Goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.